And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, this is the 113th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. And quite a number of things happened on this particular date in history. In 2015 BC, a temple was built on the Capitoline Hill dedicated to Venus Erycina to commemorate the Roman defeat at Lake Trasimena. 599, Maya King Unai Chan of Calamu attacks rival city-state Palenque in southern Mexico, defeating Queen Yohei Iknal and sacking the city. 711, Dagobert III succeeds his father, King Childebert III, as King of the Franks. 1014, Battle of Clontarf. The High King of Ireland, Brian Boru, defeats Viking invaders but is killed in the battle. 1016, Edmund Ironside succeeds his father, Ethelred the Unready, as King of England. 1343, St. George's Night Uprising commences in the Duchy of Estonia. 1348, founding of the Order of the Garter by King Edward III is announced on St. George's Day. 1516, the Munich Reinheitsgebot regarding the ingredients of beer takes effect in all of Bavaria. 1521, Battle of Villalar. King Charles I of Spain defeats the Comaneros. 1635, the first public school in the United States, the Boston Latin School, is founded in Boston. 1655, the Siege of Santo Domingo begins during the Anglo-Spanish War, fails 7 days later. 1660, Treaty of Olivia is established between Sweden and Poland. 1661, King Charles II of England, Scotland, and Ireland is crowned in Westminster Abbey. 1815, the Second Serbian Uprising, second phase of the National Revolution of the Serbs against the Ottoman Empire, erupts shortly after the annexation of the country by the Ottoman Empire. 1879, fire burns down the second main building and dome, University of Notre Dame, which prompts the construction of the third and current main building with its golden dome. 1914, first baseball game at Wrigley Field, then known as Weigman Park in Chicago. 1918, British Royal Navy makes a raid in an attempt to neutralize the Belgian port of Bruges-Zeebrugge. 1920, the Grand National Assembly of Turkey is founded in Ankara. Assembly denounces the government of Sultan Mehmed VI and announces the preparation of a temporary constitution. 1927, Cardiff City defeat Arsenal in the FA Cup final. The only time it's been won by a team not based in England. 1935, the Polish Constitution is adopted. 1940, the Rhythm Club fire at a dance hall in Natchez, Mississippi, kills 198 people. 1941, the Greek government and King George II evacuate Athens before the invading Wehrmacht. 1942, Baedeker Blitz, German bombers hit Exeter, Bath, and York in retaliation for the British raid on Lübeck. 1945, Adolf Hitler's designated successor, Hermann Göring, sends him a telegram asking permission to take leadership of the Third Reich. Barton Bormann and Joseph Goebbels advise Hitler the telegram is treason, and of course he removed Göring as his designated successor. In fact, he ordered his arrest. All right, in 1946, Manuel Roxas, elected the last president of the Commonwealth of the Philippines. 1949, a Chinese Civil War and the establishment of the People's Liberation Army and Navy. 1951, American journalist William Otis is arrested for espionage by the communist government of Czechoslovakia. 1961, the Algiers push by French generals. 1967, Soyuz 1, a manned space flight carrying cosmonaut Colonel Vladimir Komarov is launched into orbit. 1968, student protesters at Columbia University in New York City take over the administration building and shut down the university. 1971, the Bangladesh Liberation War. The Pakistan Army and Razakzar massacre approximately 3,000 Hindu immigrants in the Chittagong area of East Pakistan, which is now Bangladesh. 1985, Coca-Cola changes its formula and releases the New Coke, which was a major disaster. The response was overwhelmingly negative, and the original formula is back on the market in less than 3 months. Somebody always wants to mark his territory by changing what's been working. And my philosophy is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. 1990, Namibia becomes the 160th member of the United Nations and the 50th member of the Commonwealth of Nations. 1993, Eritrean vote overwhelmingly for independence from Ethiopia. United Nations monitored referendum, which means it was a disaster, of course. 1993, Sri Lankan politician Lalith Athulamudali is assassinated while addressing a gathering 4 weeks ahead of the provincial council elections for the Western Province. 1990, NATO bombs the headquarters of Radio Television of Serbia as part of their aerial campaign against the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. 2005, the first ever YouTube video titled Me at the Zoo, published by co-founder Jawad Karim. 2013, at least 28 people are killed, more than 70 are injured as violence breaks out in Alisha, Iraq. 2018, a vehicle ramming attack kills 10 people and injures 16 in Toronto. 25-year-old suspect Alec Minassian is arrested. 2019, the Hapakat Jade Mine collapse in Myanmar kills 4 miners and 2 rescuers. A lot of deaths took place, births and deaths took place on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Castile and Leon Day in Castile and Leon in Spain, Christian Feast Day, Adalbert of Prague, Felix, Fortunatus, and Archelius, George, Blessed Giles of Assisi, Gerard of Toul, Ibarra of Begarin, Toyohiko Kagawa, Episcopal and Lutheran Church, and its Eastern Orthodox liturgics. It's the earliest day on which the first day of Children's Day can fall. April 29th is the latest. Celebrated normally on the last day of April in Colombia. Independence Day in the Conch Republic, that's Key West, Florida. At one point in time, they were an independent republic. International Pixel-Stained Techno-Peasant Day. Kanham Day in Manipur. National Sovereignty and Children's Day in Turkey and Northern Cyprus. Navy Day in China. St. George's Day in England and its related observances. Canadian Book Day in Canada. La Diada de Sant Jordi in Catalonia, Spain. And World Book Day. And it's UN English Language Day in the United Nations, of course. Anything to do with America, they don't really observe. I lived in New York City for a while, and I saw none of these observances by the UN. All right. All that having been said, let us move on. We were talking about the Dark Fleet, which is, according to a lot of conspiracy theorists, it's the secret Nazi space program, where they have work behind the scenes. Now, it is known that there was a member of the German military put into orbit in 1944. And it's, if they were orbiting in 1944 and they managed to control the science, because a lot of German scientists vanished. Who knows what they could have done? Now, the Germans had concentration camps as early as March of 1905. And the interesting thing is that the first German colonies in Africa was established by a small company led by an adventurer by the name of Carl Peters in the East African coast opposite the island of Zanzibar. Based on treaties, Peters had negotiated with local chieftains for a vast tract of land comprising about 60,000 square miles. Now, Peters was acting on his own. But March 3rd, 1885, Bismarck granted him an imperial charter to create colonies. So this all became a German protectorate. So he moved to expand the colony north and south along the coast. The Sultan of Zanzibar protested he owned that land. But Bismarck sent five warships to support the protectorate with guns trained on the Sultan's palace. Of course, the Sultan at that point changed his mind about who actually owned that land. So the Germans had their first legal colony in Africa, and they called it German East Africa. Now, this territory is now what we call today Tanzania, Burundi, and Rwanda. Peters used small local armed mercenary contingents for security, mainly lower-ranked military men. And his forces developed a reputation for brutality, including the hanging and flogging of the natives. So, no one understood what caused the cruelty. What was the purpose? I mean, everybody was pretty much going along with the program. According to the belief within the UFO community, it was arcane cruelty. According to Wikipedia, travelers and newspaper reporters brought back stories of black and brown natives serving German managers and settlers as literally slaves. There were reports of colonial malfeasance, corruption, and brutality in some of the protectorates, and Lutheran and Roman Catholic missionaries dispatched disturbing reports to their mission headquarters in Germany. But in spite of all that, the colonial economy was thriving. The roads, the railways, the shipping, and telegraph communications were up to the minute. Now, much of this rapid development was facilitated by harsh-treated native labor. Interestingly, and increasingly, reports of German oppression began to filter back to the European newspapers. According to New World Encyclopedia, rebellions, when they took place, were brutally crushed. The Herero natives were peaceful cattle traders living in the vast territory of Southwest Africa on the Atlantic coast that had been annexed to Germany by Great Britain at the Anti-Slavery Conference and had become a German protectorate. Now, the Hereros were in conflict with another tribe and requested assistance from the Germans to help them. On October 21st, 1895, the Herero chief, Maherero, signed a protection treaty with Germany's colonial governor, Heinrich Goering, who was the father of none other than Hermann Goering, later who became Hitler's commander of the German Air Force. But this was strictly a mutual assistance pact, and the Hereros did not cede any of their land to Germany. Now, the treaty lapsed for 2 years, starting in 1888, but then was resumed in 1890. By this time, Bismarck had stepped down, and his duties as head of state were taken over by Kaiser Wilhelm II in 1888. And Wilhelm quickly became known to be more racially insensitive and severe in his treatment of the African natives than had been Bismarck. And this attitude fostered German colonial crimes against the natives. In 1890, Marrero's son, Samuel, succeeded his father as chief and signed over a large parcel of the land to the Germans in return for their endorsement of his elevation to becoming the primary native representative in dealing with the Germans. But nothing improved, unfortunately. According to Wikipedia, the German colonial rule, natives were routinely used as slave labor, and their lands were frequently confiscated and given to colonists who were encouraged to settle on land taken from the natives. And the land was even stocked with cattle stolen from the Hereros and the Namas, which caused a great deal of resentment in both tribes. Now, over the next decade, the land and the cattle that were essential to Herero Nama lifestyles passed into the hands of German settlers arriving in Southwest Africa. Herero women and girls reportedly frequently raped by German colonists, crimes that were greeted by a wink and a nod in Berlin. In 1894, Theodore Luthwin, a lawyer from Berlin in the same socioeconomic class as the Kaiser, was appointed governor of the Protectorate, supported by a German paramilitary contingent maintaining order and ethnic peace. But, of course, the real purpose of the troop was to protect the colonists from native incursions. This group, called the Schutz Group, initially consisted of 160 men, mostly white settlers and mercenaries, organized in three platoons. At the outbreak of World War I in 1914, about 300 European soldiers and 2,500 natives were added to this force. And the Schutz Group in Africa was originally under the command of Bismarck and then the Emperor, but was never really part of the German Imperial Army. It remained under the colonial office. By 1903, the Hereros and the Namas had ceded over 25% of their land, which was originally about 50,000 square miles, to the German colonists. In fact, most of it was just simply taken over by the colonists, backed by their military arm. According to the British Blue Book, the famous credit ordinance was promulgated in the middle of that year. And it all came about because Governor Luthwin announced a new policy for giving debts not paid in a year. So the colonists started to grab cattle and anything else they could get their hands on as repayment from the natives. I mean, the natives were in the habit of borrowing money from the colonists at exorbitant interest rates. And the famous credit ordinance was promulgated in the middle of 1903. And that led to the Herero Nama Revolt. Traders were against Luthwin's direct advice, given 1 year in which to collect outstanding debts, which would be prescribed after that. And they, of course, they took all the cattle they could find. And this added fuel to the existing fire of native resentment. And you're going to wonder what all this has to do with the Black Fleet or the Dark Fleet. But I'm getting to that. In early 1904, the natives organized militarily and launched a surprise attack. They killed over 150 colonists. Encouraged by their initial victories, led by Chief Samuel Mohero, the Hereros surrounded the small city of Okahanja and cut communication links to the colonial capital, which cut off German reinforcements. Now, Herero issued a manifesto forbidding his troops to kill any Englishmen, Boers, uninvolved people, women and children in general, or German missionaries. So that left only male colonists and the Schutz Group as targets. And Luthwin succeeded in convincing one of the rebel tribes to surrender their weapons. And then as soon as he had them disarmed, he asked for military help from Berlin. And Luthwin wanted a peace treaty. But the Kaiser, who controlled the Imperial German Army, wasn't interested in that. He wanted them wiped out. Now, there's quite a lot of information available about the fact that they started a program of genocide, which seemed to be in line with German thinking, even into the 40s. Now, the Kaiser coming to power in 1888 began a new era for Germany. Despite the fact the Kaiser claimed to be indebted to Bismarck for how he had transformed the Prussian states into a strong, unified Germany, he harbored the belief Bismarck wasn't strong enough and didn't go far enough in showing the world how great and mighty Germany could be. And that was his obsession. The part of the impetus for what became known as the Dark Fleet came from the Krupp family. And the industries of most concern to the aliens in the early 20th century were weaponry, pharmaceuticals, and the media. So they convinced the Bavarian Illuminati to focus on those areas at that time and had them divert huge sums of money to the right groups. Then they contacted key individuals in those groups and helped them along by influencing their home areas, better known as the lower astral realm. Of these three critical industries, weaponry took first place because a world war was tops on the agenda. Consequently, early in the 20th century, Germany became the largest worldwide manufacturer of weapons of all type. And this was accomplished almost exclusively through a single corporate entity owned outright by the Krupp family. Now, according to Wikipedia, the Krupp family, a prominent 400-year-old German dynasty from Essen, has become famous for their production of steel, artillery, ammunition, and other armaments. The family business, known as Friedrich Krupp AG, was the largest company in Europe at the beginning of the 20th century. And it was very important to weapons development and production in both world wars. One of the most powerful dynasties in European history for 400 years, Krupp flourished as a premier weapons manufacturer for Germany. From the 30 Years' War to the end of the Second World War, they produced everything from battleships, U-boats, tanks, howitzers, guns, utilities, and hundreds of other commodities. And needless to say, a single German corporation had unique power to carry out the war agenda by creating products for the slaughter of millions of the human population. And needless to say, this sudden and extensive rearmament of Germany alarmed the other nations in Europe, who were also very concerned about German militancy, so they felt it was necessary to rearm as well. So naturally, they turned to Krupp, the preeminent arm manufacturer in Europe, for further enriching the coffers of the Krupp family. Now, until 1903, the Krupp family remained under autocratic male family rule. But in 1903, only a teenage girl remained to lead the family in the massive corporation. Bertha, who was the oldest daughter of Friedrich Alfred Krupp, inherited all but four shares of the now joint stock corporation. And because weaponry was so vital to the war plans of Kaiser Wilhelm II, he arranged for Bertha to marry a man of his choice to run the company. And the man he chose was Gustav von Bohlen und Halbach, a Prussian diplomat employed at the Vatican. And he was somebody that the Kaiser knew he could manipulate. So by doing this, the Kaiser became the sole master of the German armaments industry as he prepared to attack Russia and France. And that meant the Kaiser could now select who got Krupp's best armaments, including the enemies of Germany who relied heavily on Krupp products. And this ability to control who got what played out precisely as planned, so that by 1911, 50% of all Krupp armaments were sold to Germany, and 52 other nations had to divide what was left. And that remainder could easily be strategically sliced up further to deny weapons based on battlefield conditions. Well, the marriage of Bertha Krupp to Gustav von Bohlen und Halbach sealed the blood-soaked fate of Europe and ultimately the entire world for the entire 20th century. At the wedding, the Kaiser announced he was awarding the additional name Krupp to von Bohlen und Halbach by imperial decree, and that name would now be passed on to all descendants of the couple. So by this matrimonial sleight of hand, the Kaiser ensured that the historic Krupp legacy would live on and he'd continue to be in control of armaments in his role as the godfather of the chief executive of the company. Bertha, of course, was not allowed to rule as chief executive, but everyone looked to von Bohlen und Halbach, now Gustav Krupp von Bohlen und Halbach, who was described as an avowed monarchist. I mean, you know, that explained his close friendship with the Kaiser. At 36, when he was persuaded by the Kaiser to marry the 20-year-old Bertha Krupp, which probably wasn't that great a achievement since she was much younger, attractive, and popular in Berlin society. At that stage of his life, Krupp, von Bohlen, and Halbach's political leanings had probably become hardened. But nobody could have predicted just how avowed he'd become in later life. Monarchism, especially the absolute version, is a belief that an absolute ruler would have unrestricted power to govern a nation. Based on that philosophy, Krupp von Bohlen and Halbach was more than pleased to help the monarch and the person of the Kaiser build Germany into a fearsome superpower. And the weaponry produced by Krupp under Krupp von Bohlen and Halbach's leadership was astounding. And since he had the power to deprive Germany's adversaries of equal capability, it seemed to the Kaiser that the path to German hegemony over the European continent was assured. So, of course, he was not adverse to fighting a true front war, despite Napoleon's failure to succeed in that strategy. And it was in artillery that Germany excelled. Krupp designed a battlefield mega weapon called the Gamma-Gerät Howitzer, which weighed 150 tons and fired shells weighing up to 1,160 kilograms, which was 2,557 pounds. But it had to be fired while embedded in concrete from a stationary fortification, and it had to be transported in sections on 10 railway cars, 6 for the gun and 4 for the bedding. Now, after the war, World War I, that is, you know, even though the Kaiser lost the war, he completed his mission of laying the groundwork for the appearance of Hitler. He had organized and improved the military, created the Navy, of which the submarine fleet was paramount in World War II, prepared the German people for a continuation of a monarchical form of government for the 20th century, which Hitler then could take advantage of, created the false myth that the Versailles Treaty was a stab in the back, which Hitler used very effectively to sell the German people on the need for a war, caused the slaughter of a generation of young men in the militaries of all the Allied nations, which would take time to replace, and most importantly, created, expanded, and enriched the Krupp weapons dynasty. Now, after the war, it was primarily the right-wing parties in Germany that were the most vocal about the so-called betrayal of the Treaty of Versailles in 1919, which, of course, was a fiction. These complaints were voiced mainly by the Prussian monarchist elements in Germany, which Krupp von Bohlen and Halbach was a leading figure. And certainly he was spoiling for a rematch. Well, as World War II advanced, Krupp von Bohlen and Halbach developed health problems, and Alfred, the eldest of the 8 children of the couple, took over control of the firm in 1943. And Alfred Krupp's production goals became huge as Hitler's tanks and artillery were chewed up at Stalingrad and on the Western Front as the Krupp factories were decimated from the air. So he turned to the option the Illuminati always kept in reserve and that was infused into the Nazi Party, slavery. Internet source titled Fritz Spregmeyer in his work says Fritz Spregmeyer is probably the world's foremost authority on the bloodlines of the Illuminati and techniques they employ to create a mind-controlled slave. And he went into great detail in how this process was used in regard to the Krupps. Now, the widespread adoption of slavery in German industrial organization, which was notorious in the case of Krupp, is further evidence in addition to Führer Prinzip, that Nazi Germany itself was a throwback to Imperial Rome, where slavery was institutionalized. It was all part of a national reincarnation of pagan society led by the Nazi Party, which the German people supported fully. They even had pagan rituals and parades in which members were all dressed in authentic Roman garb. Even the Hail Caesar salute became normalized across all classes. And it was a strange spectacle in the 20th century, as ridiculed by the American press and movie makers like Walt Disney. And in any case, the adoption of slavery in all German organizations was carried over to what many believe was an installation called Base 211 in Antarctica, in which they brought 36,000 slaves from occupied Europe. Even more significant were the German scientific advances in the pharmaceutical industry. Now, this was of major importance since the aliens are known to be master bioengineers and biogeneticists. And they use these skills to develop advanced programs and hybridization with targeted populations, and consequently, they require the same scientific expertise in the controlled industries that they work through. And this was a perfect match with the German scientists, who are also known to have focused on development of advanced bioengineering. There are currently over 270 biotech companies in Germany, some of which are the largest, most advanced in the world, with branches and outlets all over the globe. IG Farben, the German chemical company, produced the poison gas Zyklon B, which was used to kill prisoners at Auschwitz and other concentration camps during the World War II. Was it one time the largest company in Europe and the largest chemical and pharmaceutical company in the world? After World War II, and forced by the Allies to break up and divest some of their companies, Farben spun off Bayer AG but retained several former Farben executives on the board of directors. Bayer has since become the 16th largest pharmaceutical company in the world as of 2015. It's now into crop science and has recently acquired the massive Monsanto company, which is currently under fire for creating much said soil poisoning agricultural chemicals as Roundup and specializing in producing food containing genetically modified organisms. I might point out that Roundup has been shown to cause cancer in its users, and they lost a multi-billion-dollar suit. So Bayer is now positioned as a major player in the alteration of the food and chemicals that enter millions of human bodies worldwide. In her online article, Monsanto Bayer, Two Destructive Corporate Conglomerates Become One, Mary M. Heinen says, how convenient, they can make us sick with their poisons, genetically modified faux food, and treat us with their treadmill of drugs. This consolidation creates supply chain dominance, also known as vertical integration, in a $100 billion global market. Thus, a single German corporation has a unique power to help implement the human enslavement agenda of the invaders by the manipulation of human biochemistry in billions of the worldwide population. Of course, of high importance to this system is control of all public media. Keeping employees in the dark depends on what they read or view in their spare time. The masses can be made to believe that they have freedom of expression, but in reality, it's the managers at the top level of media who decide what to feed the minds of the populace, and so to keep them engaged and working in their corporate roles. I would point to CNN and the damage it's done to the politics of this country, primarily thanks to CNN continually hammering on it. We went through 4 years, almost 4 years, and over $30 million in a phony investigation designed to delegitimize the elected president in favor of the loser. Furthermore, this arrangement, supported by the psychological and psychiatric establishments in the major 20th century industrial countries, especially Germany and the U.S., by imposing a form of public operant conditioning, which is the control of social stimuli, they obtain the desired responses. This is really akin to hypnotic suggestion, but it's because of a type of populist mind control, which is the ultimate invader's goal. In its extreme form, it can result in Pavlovian condition, which is more mindless and automatic form of conditioning. Really, a semi-hypnotic system which a knee-jerk reaction to some sort of unrelated stimulus is elicited. We saw an example of this in 1962 film The Manchurian Candidate. It was the candidate, upon hearing a few words or a code word over the phone from his controller, embarked on a plan to murder an important politician. And both types of conditioning are forms of mind control, or also known as MKUltra. Now, from all indications, the Nazi involvement with what the UFO community referred to as invaders began in the 1920s, long before Hitler came to power. Hitler was introduced to the concept by means of his friendship with occultist Dietrich Eckart, who was a member of the Thule Society. Eckhart invited Hitler to the black magic seances of the society because his astral contacts had identified Hitler as the incarnation of the Antichrist and the leader-to-be of the new Germany that Eckhart was fervently seeking. And those black sexual black magic sessions over the three-year period from 1920 to 23, there's evidence that Hitler's personality changed as he became taken over by a powerful malevolent entity. Now, Eckhart, of course, believed it was the Antichrist. It may just have been a releasing of any inhibitions that may have existed. Eckhart had no way of knowing or understanding his astral contacts were actually alien invaders. These invaders are known to inhabit the fourth dimension and to masquerade as demons to impress the gullible occultist. They couldn't reveal themselves as aliens because that idea was much too far outside the comprehension of the eager beaver demon seekers. So it could be said that Hitler became demonic, but in reality became taken over by those masters of the astral realm, the mentally powerful invaders. Once he was taken over, they controlled him and paved the way for him to create a dictatorship and for Germany to abandon democratic rule. Now, the invaders have shown they always prefer to deal with one individual idea to bring about their political agenda, in this case, fascism. This was a radical transformation for Germany. Even Otto von Bismarck, the Iron Chancellor of the 19th century, had to defer to democratic principles, though he thoroughly dominated the German Empire. But this was the first time that an uneducated commoner like Hitler, with absolutely no political experience or royal pretensions, had taken over complete control of Germany, and it was really the invaders that many believe made it happen. On his own, there was absolutely no way for Hitler, somebody who was clearly of a mediocre intellect and talent, could have effected such a grandiose achievement. For the next 10 years, 1923 to 1933, important financial and political connections are made by Hitler for the invaders. These are connections the ex-corporal would not have ever made for himself. Just as he had in World War I, he led a charmed life. His famous book, Mein Kampf, was written for him by Karl Haushofer. Even the title wasn't his. Eventually, in 1933, he found himself as Chancellor of Germany as Nazi Party came into control of the German government. With the burning of the Reichstag and the passage of the Enabling Act in 1933, Hitler became a modern-day Caesar. And like Caesar, he insisted on being hailed in obeisance by the population. As during his 10-year period, the Nazis were made aware of the alien base under 2 miles of ice in Antarctica. It was also revealed to them this was their new home, that they'd eventually join their invading compatriots in Antarctica and be given spacefaring science and technology while Germany itself would be reduced to ashes. Now, this was known because the invaders were in possession of a chronovisor, a device for viewing probable future events. As early as 1943, when the American army landed on Anzio Beach in Italy, Hitler knew the war in Europe was over. It was then when he had Martin Bormann built him a new home in Inalco and Nebrera of the Ocean, Argentina. Once having placed him in power, the invaders paved the way for a fascist takeover of the planet. Now, this was their ultimate plan, although they never expected to win the war, and they had other fish to fry, so to speak. First and foremost, Hitler needed an army. 1933, Germany was under the strict control of the Treaty of Versailles to limit their armed forces to 100,000 men for all military units combined. All they really had were a lot of dispirited, aging veterans of World War I and young, inexperienced draftees. Well, the invader scientists had a history of cloning biotechnology stretching back thousands of years in their home world. So it wasn't difficult for them to produce a cloned army of 1 million fighting men of just the right age in their underground laboratories and on their ships. These men were probably, in many cases, cyborgs. They certainly acted like it. And so it was in September 1934 on the vast parade grounds in Nuremberg, Hitler gazed out at 160,000 of his newly minted legions, all properly armed with rifles and backpacks and standing at attention, their helmets glistening in the sun. Then came the advanced weaponry, the so-called wonder weapons, including rockets, jet, aircraft, and huge submarines capable of crossing the Atlantic underwater. And finally, they developed a totally new science and technology, anti-gravity propulsion. Flying disc would have been the ultimate weapon and by themselves might have won the war, but they just literally came too late. Even the jets the Germans developed couldn't be produced quickly enough to shift the the power. However, the ending had been foreseen by the invaders. They knew that once American infantry came up to speed, none of the wonder weapons would matter, and Hitler, like Napoleon and the Kaiser before him, would never hope to win a two-front war. And they also realized that an army, no matter how large, can never defeat an army of creative-thinking individual soldiers, each of whom would devise strategies for every situation, whereas the robotic-acting German troops could only follow orders, no matter how ill-conceived. So when the tide of war began to turn in 43, the German generals realized they had to prepare for the end. But the invaders already knew the ending, so they had begun their preparations a year before the war began. 1938, they persuaded the Nazis to mount a massive exploration and settlement of Antarctica. Such a complicated and expensive operation had to be at the behest of the invaders. Seems impossible that a nation contemplating what they knew would result in a world war would have begun such a vast exploratory operation 6,000 miles away across the Atlantic. Only 1 year prior to invading Poland. Now, Hitler knew that England would declare war immediately because of their defense compact with Poland. So this suggests the Antarctic project was actually of more importance to the Nazis than the war itself. And yet, they didn't have any idea what they'd find in that frozen wasteland. In his book, Germany's Antarctic Claim, Secret Nazi Polar Expedition, Christoph Friedrich says there's no source at that time that could provide even the barest hint of what was to be discovered. For as late as 1930, merely 15% of Antarctica had been explored. And that only tentatively by hardy trekkers who were mainly concerned with their own immediate problems of survival. In fact, in all the recorded history, fewer than 400 people had even been to the continent. And make no mistake, this was an extremely expensive project at a time when Germany had only recently escaped from a crushing inflation that it took a wheelbarrow full of Reichsmarks to buy a loaf of bread. And now, in 1938, they could afford expensive, sophisticated armaments as well as settlement of the Antarctica. The expedition was directed by Hermann Göring, second-in-command only to Hitler. But it is also known to involve the mysterious Thule Society, which Eckhart had been a member. In the book Germany's Antarctic Claim, it stated the following top-level government bodies were directly responsible for the proper outfitting of the research vessel and the planes. The German Naval High Command, the German Air Force High Command, the Reich's Finance Ministry, the Reich's Ministry for Food and Agriculture, Lufthansa, the German National Airline, the Nord-Dutch Lloyd Shipping Company, a quasi-government steamship company, the Deutsche Werft, Hamburg, a shipyard engaged in top-secret naval conduction, including submarines and surface vessels. This was a cross-section of the entire German financial, military, and industrial superstructure. So this mission was clearly very important to the future of both the nation and the Nazi Party. Everything about this operation was first class and meticulously planned. The ship itself, the Swabenland, was perfect for the ice-filled Antarctic waters, even though it would be sailing during the Antarctic summer. It carried two catapult-launched seaplanes and a trove of electronic monitoring equipment, all very advanced for that time frame. In Germany's Antarctic Claim, we learned that scientists, experts, and their assistants were carefully selected from the sponsoring government bodies as well as the universities and research institutes. Far from being flabby, bespectacled ivory tower types, these men were of the mind were selected for their physical fitness as well as their academic achievements. Rarely in the history of exploration has there been such interdisciplinary cooperation and close fertilization in politics, philosophy, science, diplomacy, and all branches of government, including the military. The captain, Alfred Reicher, was a legendary Arctic explorer who 25 years before had been forced to abandon his iceman ship in Arctic waters and walk for 7 days over ice floes before getting rescued. He lost fingers and toes to frostbite. Critical in this company were the agriculturalists, revealing the expedition's intention of developing a colony with a self-sustaining food supply. And let's not forget, the entire mission was cloaked in secrecy. All the participants were segregated by their area of expertise. Strict military security was followed. According to Germany's Antarctic Claim, all technicians, scientists, and crew members worked on the need-to-know principle. And this principle was carried to the extent that those concerned with the compilation of scientific data, the airmen, the technicians, oceanographers, biologists, meteorologists, had their own quarters and ate in a mess room separate from the ordinary crew members. And to compound the mystery, the ship took on board a great number of sturdy, tightly sealed crates and boxes that fell under the personal control of Dr. Taut, who was officially the secretary of the expedition. As these often heavy containers are not entered on the ship's cargo manifest, unsuspecting crew members asked Dr. Taut what their contents might be. In answer, he was as silent as death, as they said. Fritz Taut was a loyal member of the Nazi Party in 1938, was Hitler's Minister of Armaments. So it makes sense that in that capacity that he would know what was in those containers, and also they probably had to do with the anti-gravity flying ship propulsion technology. And these explorers knew exactly what they were looking for. They carved out a huge chunk of Queen Maud Land bordering the Weddell Sea and named it New Swabenland. They dropped 50 weighted 4x6-foot swastika flag pinions all over that territory from the seaplanes, believing it now belonged to Nazi Germany. However, in 1952, that claim was denied when all of Antarctica became an international zone by sanction of the UN, permitting foreign colonies but no annexation of territory. In the area that they carved out, Nazi explorers discovered large ice-free areas and warm water lakes, which they named the Rainbow Lakes because of the color of the algae, and also found deep crevices crossing the continent from north to south. When they descended into crevices, they were amazed to see that they widened into huge caverns. They also uncovered a deep freshwater trench under the ice cover from the north shore to the south through the area of New Swabenland. This under-ice waterway provided perfect access to the caverns, giving submarines warm-weather debarkation points. And they found a tunnel running from the Weddell Sea to those landing points. By the time the Antarctic winter set in, the expedition had, with the help of their invader friends, identified a veritable protected area in the caverns in which to locate their colony. And that's where they unloaded their secret cargo. As the Wehrmacht rolled over Europe, the buildup of the Antarctic base continued at a frenetic pace. The demands of the war had no effect on the burgeoning colony, both in terms of personnel and construction projects, as well as scientific and industrial development. Following that initial incursion, the Nazis sent out numerous exploratory missions to the Queen Maud region from South Africa, which had a white supremacist government at that time. Altogether, about 360,000 square miles were mapped from the air, which became known as New Swabenland. His base was in the Mulig-Hoffmann Mountains, very close to the Princess Astrid coast. Now, the Omega File is a remarkable, comprehensive exposure of all of the secret international operations and events that have transpired in the 20th century. It was written by Bruce Allen DeWalton, who's unfortunately now deceased, who adopted the pen name of Bratton. Just as with the Ascension Glossary, it exists only online. According to the Omega File, various scientific teams were moved into the area, including hunters, trappers, collectors, zoologists, botanists, agriculturists, plant specialists, mycologists, parasitologists, marine biologists, ornithologists, and many others. Numerous divisions of the German government were involved in this top-secret project. An article in Plain Truth magazine in the U.S. in June of 1952 said in 1940 the Nazis started to amass tractors, planes, sledges, gliders, and all sorts of machinery and material in the South Polar regions. For the next 4 years, Nazi technicians built on Antarctica the Führer Shangri-La. Engineers constructed buildings in the colony that could withstand temperatures of minus 60 degrees Fahrenheit. The entire colony was built in the massive caverns 2 miles beneath the ice with easy access by submarine through the tunnel from the Weddell Sea. By 1943, as the tide of war changed, the Allies noticed increased submarine traffic in the South Atlantic. At that point, the New Swabenland Development Project was taken under control of Hermann Göring and turned over to Himmler. So it became an SS operation. Göring's reputation had plummeted after he lost the Battle of Britain, and the British fighters and bombers are now wrecking major damage in Germany. Also, the British Army was back in the fight after the miraculous rescue at Dunkirk. So the renewed attention to New Swabianland probably reflected a new wartime reality, with Himmler now focused on making New Swabianland a racially pure Aryan colony. So he selected 10,000 young Ukrainian women, all blonde, blue-eyed, and 2,500 battle-hardened Waffen-SS soldiers to breed the new race to become the foundation of the Fourth Reich under the ice and the new city of New Berlin. The buildup of New Swabianland was massive. According to noted Third Reich researcher and writer Rob Arndt, after the war, the Allies were able to determine that 54 U-boats were missing from Nazi Germany. He also said between 142,000 and 250,000 people are unaccounted for, including the entire SS technical branch, the entire Vril and Thule Gesellschafts, 6,000 scientists and technicians, and tens of thousands of slave laborers. This also included the so-called Lost Battalion. The SS technical branch was under the direction of Himmler and was the group responsible for the development and manufacture of the anti-gravity disc. And it's believed they all ended up in Antarctica. And this explains how the Nazis were able to defeat Admiral Richard Byrd's Armada in Operation High Jump in 1946. It's estimated the current population of New Berlin is over 2 million people. Now, Himmler was a rabid believer in occultism, and in his sinister SS castle in Wellesburg, he conducted seances to contact the demons in the astral realm, who we now know were actually alien invaders. So it's probably through Himmler that contact and coordination with the invaders continued. Since we know the invaders had an ancient colony in Antarctica, it's reasonable to conclude they convinced him to become involved in the New Swabianland project after Göring's status declined and he lost interest. But more importantly, Himmler was made to understand that winning the war was no longer the long-term Nazi objective. It was the post-war situation that mattered, and the future of the Nazi Party was no longer confined to Earth. It was now in the solar system and beyond. Now, it's not clear how the invaders are able to expand Himmler's horizons, but we do know he eagerly adopted his new role as a galactic leader of the Nazi Party and the coordinator of the transformation of Antarctica into a spaceport. Apparently, the reptilians liked the idea of a ruthless, immoral human contingent doing all their earthly dirty work for him, especially humans who enjoyed enslaving and abusing large masses of people and using them for genetic experimentation. And as we've seen, the Nazis fulfilled that role perfectly. They also acted as cold-blooded intermediaries in obtaining human flesh and blood for the invaders. It was a marriage made in hell. And so this cosmic partnership was forged, and these soulless humans got to continue their jackbooted Nazi authority off the earth as long as their invading overlords found them useful. Now, Hitler had many clashes with Albert Speer, who became the Minister of Armaments after the death of Taut in a plane crash in 1942. And he blatantly attempted to bypass Speer and go directly to Hitler to take over all matters related to armaments. And Speer describes all these conflicts with Himmler in his book entitled Infiltration, how Heinrich Himmler schemed to build an SS industrial empire, which came out in 1981. Himmler delighted in using concentration camp inmates as slave labor. To him, they were simply disposal, where Speer wanted to treat them all with dignity and respect and give them technical jobs, allowing them to live with their families. As Himmler took over more and more of the armaments manufacturing, Speer relied on his influence with Hitler to oppose him. But that influence began to wane as Hitler became mesmerized by Himmler's seeming grasp of the amazing new technology and his management of the Antarctic colony. Also, Hitler knew of the post-war plans for the Nazi Party, whereas Speer was kept in the dark. And Hitler knew he himself would survive in Argentina. According to Speer, on page 230 of his book, as the war advanced, Himmler interfered more and more instantly with the affairs of my ministry. Usually he turned to Hans Kammler with regard to large-scale construction projects churned out by his brain, which was indefatigably preoccupied with new ideas. Kammler, a general, vanished along with all the technology related to the Bell. Speer, of course, didn't know about Himmler's responsibility for the new Swabianland colony, so he couldn't assess why Himmler did what he did. Also, he knew nothing of the top-secret anti-gravity technology development, which was in the direction of SS General Hans Kammler as the massive Skoda Works munition plant near Pilsen, Czechoslovakia. Kamler, a civil engineer, was highly regarded by Himmler because he had designed and built the Auschwitz concentration camp, including the Zyklon B poison gas delivery component. In late 1945, after the conclusion of the war and what became known as Operation Tabarin, British commandos from the secret Mannheim base in Antarctica discovered the entrance to the tunnel leading to the Nazi base under the Antarctic ice shelf in Clean Maudland. According to an article in the August 2005 issue of Nexus magazine by British historian James Roberts, the soldiers followed the tunnel for miles and eventually came to a vast underground cavern that was abnormally warm. Some of the scientists believed it was warm geothermally. In this huge cavern were underground lakes. However, the mystery deepened as the cavern was lit artificially. The Nazis had constructed a huge base in the caverns and even built docks for U-boats, and one was identified supposedly. Still, the deeper they traveled, the more strange visions they were greeted with. They ultimately discovered hangars for strange planes and excavations galore. Only one commando survived that operation. He told his story to a new team, which took up Operation Tabarin II in October 1945. They were more successful in blowing up the entrance to the tunnel. One surviving team member from that group said, as they looked over the entire cavern network, we were overwhelmed by the number of personnel scurrying around like ants. What was impressive was the huge constructions being built. From what we were witnessing, the Nazis had appeared to have been on Antarctica for a long, long time. We now know the strange planes were anti-gravity disks because the very next year, Byrd's fleet, which was sent to destroy the Nazi base, was greeted by flying disks. It came out of the water and destroyed at least two American ships and killed 68 Marines. This was the failed Operation High Jump, a defeat that brought about the end of Byrd's military career. Himmler, though, didn't live to see this triumph. He had already committed suicide to avoid being taken captive by the Russians. The German anti-gravity disk technology advanced rapidly from the project after the project was taken away from Goering and turned over to Himmler in 1943. Himmler gave the project to Kamler and removed it from Germany to the Skoda Works in Czechoslovakia. Kamler's group built three working models of the now famous Hannibal type. This was the distinctive bell-shaped craft powered by the rather simple electrogravitation motor called the Kohler converter, developed by Captain Hans Kohler based on the Tesla coil. This motor converted the Earth's gravitational energy into electromagnetic power, but could also attract energy from the ambient vacuum of outer space. Now, the Hannibal 1 was a small two-man ship, but the Hannibal 2 was much larger, more sophisticated. It's reported to have a diameter of about 75 feet and had the capacity to carry a full crew. The German SS plans for this craft, dated November 7, 1943, are available on the Internet. Also available are photos of the Hannibal in flight, clearly showing the German cross painted on the side and flanges and a 75-millimeter anti-tank gun mounted on a Swiffer turret, apparently identical to the gun being used on German panzer tanks. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. We're going to continue in future shows to talk about the Dark Fleet. And you'll see if any of this information that's been sent is true, there's a lot more in the world than we know anything at all about. So until tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Mountain, 8 o'clock Eastern, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.